Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
And an all-time favorite of all of ours, Johnny Clegg, King of Time. It's just gone 12 after 5, and our very much anticipated interview with Sir Mick Davis is next on the lineup. Now, Sir Mick Davis is a South African-born British businessman, philanthropist, and political figure. He served as the chief executive officer of Xstrata PLC, a major mining company, from 2001 until its merger with Glencore in 2013. Beyond his corporate achievements, Sir Mick has been deeply involved in Jewish communal life, notably as the former chairman of the Jewish Leadership Council in the UK and as chairman of the UK's Holocaust Memorial Commission. In recognition of his contributions to Holocaust education and commemoration, he was knighted in 2015. He currently lives between Israel and London. Sir Mick, thank you so much for joining us here on Hi FM. It's a pleasure to have you. I wanted to start by asking you your thoughts on Israel undergoing an existential war since October the 7th. What would you ideally like to see as a long-term solution for what is happening in the Gaza Strip?
Thank you. I'm not sure that the war in Gaza itself is existential to Israel. I think that what's existential to Israel is more what's happening internally in the country, although clearly what is happening in Gaza is a reflection of the orchestration of by Iran of Israel's enemies to destabilize the country. But the Gaza war itself, I don't think, is existential. It's obviously the attack by Hamas in October the 7th was deeply wounding and deeply destabilizing and shocked everyone in Israel and everybody outside Israel, and I think in a sense caused people to worry about whether the Israeli government and the Israeli Defense Force were capable of defending themselves from attack, and those things are obviously very important. But the reality is that today, I mean, Hamas as a military force is highly compromised, and although what they can do and what they have done in the past is obviously deeply concerning for all of us, I don't think that's existential.
Would you say that it's an existential threat from within? Because if I'm not mistaken, you have said that, and I wanted to ask you, what exactly do you see as the biggest danger right now?
Well, I think it is from the divisions and contradictions with the Israeli society. I think that is the thing which actually threatens to undermine the resilience of the nation state and the Jewish people. That doesn't to say that Israel does not have externalities and threats which it must be concerned about. And certainly Iran is a very big factor in that. Although today, given the success of the Israeli ability to sort of reduce the capacity of Hezbollah and Hamas to attack Israel, who are certainly acolytes of Iran, and to inflict significant damage on Iran itself and demonstrate that Iran has significant weaknesses in its own air defense system, has somewhat put that to abeyance. But the concern about Iran becoming a nuclear power must clearly be a big factor and existential considerations to that. But in terms of my view today, I mean, what I think Israel faces is a fragmentation of Israeli society. I think there are huge issues around fairness across Israeli society. I think the huge issues around the democratic mandate within Israel, and obviously the ongoing conflict with the Palestinians, the occupation of the West Bank, gives rise to significant discontinuities within Israel. And these are the things which I think, are the most immediate threats to, to the coherence of Israel as the homeland of the Jewish people, to the ideas which gave rise to that in the Declaration of Independence. And these are the things that I think we should be most concerned about today.
When you talk about fairness and the democratic mandate around Israel, I'm going to return to those points in a moment, but I just wanted to ask you, earlier this year, a controversial bill was introduced in the Knesset to impose an 80% tax on foreign funding for NPOs. You penned a letter to the foreign minister that was signed by 64 philanthropists indicating your opposition. Can you briefly tell us why this bill is so problematic and what's the likelihood of it being passed?
The bill is problematic because essentially what it seeks to do is for any NGO which receives funding from foreign states to essentially take that funding into the Israeli exchequer. And if that's the case, no foreign state will give funding. So essentially it's seeking to emasculate the capacity of these organizations to function. Now, whether these organizations are convenient or inconvenient for this Israeli government, or convenient or inconvenient for me as an individual, is irrelevant. They form part of the fabric of a democratic society. Many of these organizations work to ameliorate the plight of those who are not easily represented, the destitute and the poor, the people who politically feel oppressed. They're organizations who have led the charge against many of the attacks against the judicial independence of the Supreme Court. They've sought to help people in marginalized society in Israel, Arabs, Bedouins, etc. They've also actually sought to help people within the West Bank as well, and they feel they've been subject to unfair treatment by Israel. These are critical organizations. Many of them originally were set up by diaspora Jewish funding, and are only today able to receive funding from foreign governments because of the work that they do. And as I said, you know, they might be inconvenient for the government. They might, and they certainly don't necessarily do work that I always agree with. But nevertheless, they're an important part of Israel's society. And if this bill goes through, it will be an affront to those governments who support Israel in many other respects, and many of them actually supported Israel. It defended itself against Iranian missiles when they came across. They were part of the coalition that lent their radar capability, etc., to preventing those bombs from causing damage in Israel. And also Israel itself as a country, you know, funds organizations within those countries, and it creates a potential quid pro quo type response, which one not want to see, because that would be for the detriment of both diaspora Jews. So it's not a good bill. It's a bill which is not democratic. If there are any NGOs in Israel who are doing things which are illegal or against the law, then there's the weight of the law to be brought against them, and they can be prosecuted. And that is the proper course of action. Your second question is, what is the likelihood of the bill being passed? I can't answer that question. I mean, clearly it's been promoted within the coalition at the moment, and the coalition has the majority of the votes in the Knesset, so it could easily be passed. But it is a dangerous thing to be seeing taking place in a democracy. You know, these are the sorts of things you see take place in countries which are not democracies.
Mick, how has the war and the explosion of anti-Semitism around the world affected Jewish philanthropy? And what advice have you got for fellow Jewish philanthropists going forward?
Well, there is no doubt that anti-Semitism has risen dramatically around the world, both in Europe, the United Kingdom, the United States, Australia, South Africa, an outbreak of anti-Semitism. Now, I have to say to you that, you know, the issues of anti-Semitism, you know, gain currency at times of heightened tension, because that's when the anti-Semites recognize they have a potential audience to speak to. So they utilize these moments to come out, where people are sympathetic with the plight of Palestinians in Gaza, etc., and therefore they might be more receptive to the anti-Semitic tropes that these people essentially give out. Obviously, these impact Jewish communities in the diaspora very negatively, and I don't need to tell you that from a South African point of view, because you know that, you know, more acutely than most diaspora communities. My advice to philanthropists is that you need to continue doing the work that you do, and you need to recognize that anti-Semitism is about hate. It's not about constructive criticism. It's not about, you know, trying to find alternative ways. It's not about trying to single out areas where Israel could do better. Anti-Semites hate Jews, and generally hate other people as well. So we need to sort of accept that they exist. We need to fight them when we can. We need to put resources into that fight. But otherwise, we need to continue to support the nation state of Israel in the way that we have done in the past. That's what we should do. Now, if you ask me what should we be doing in relation to how Israel is prosecuting the war, that's something different. But in relation to anti-Semites, I mean, we just have to react. Anti-Semites hate Jews, and they will always hate Jews.
Well, what should we be doing to how Israel is prosecuting the war, moving forward with the war?
Well, my own personal view is that the obvious response that Israel should have and which was the response immediately after after October the 7th, was to eviscerate Hamas's military capability. And nobody can argue with that, and nobody had an argument with that. What people have an argument with today is whether it is necessary to have restarted conflict in Gaza while there was a ceasefire in place, and what are the objectives of that, the restarting of that conflict. Where is it going? How is it going to end? And are there realistic objectives that Israel can achieve? And it has said that they are prioritizing the eradication of Hamas. And nobody will dispute the fact that Hamas is a terrible organization. But the problem is you can't actually destroy extremism and the rise of extremists without sucking out the oxygen in which they breathe. And so you can kill everybody in Hamas, but you're not going to kill every extremist. There's a new Hamas organization around the corner. And so when you prosecute the war, you have to think about what you want to have in place at the end of the war. And if the vocabulary and language just comes from within the current coalition government, which talks about reoccupation of Gaza, which talks about wholesale movement of communities out of Gaza, that's not acceptable language for a democratic country like Israel to be utilizing. That doesn't solve the problem of extremism. And so, what I would want is for the Israeli government to articulate how they're going to contribute to an alternative administration in Gaza, which doesn't actually involve the movement of Palestinian people from their homes, and trying a sort of a cleansing of Gaza of Palestinians as a solution. Rather, we should try and see if we can accommodate an alternative government. Now, there have been proposals. There's the Egyptian proposal on the table that could well be looked at, which looks at some sort of technocratic type solution. The other thing which I think that needs to be looked at in terms of the war that's currently taking place in Gaza is the question of humanitarian aid. And I think it's just sort of not acceptable for there ever be to be a situation where Israel sees that it's right to deny humanitarian aid, no matter how difficult it is to get the aid to the people who deserve it, no matter how complicated it is with Hamas, and I fully believe the stories that Hamas are taking the provisions and then trying to sell them to Palestinians to profit themselves. I'm prepared to accept all those allegations as being true, but that is never an excuse, to disrupt humanitarian aid going into Gaza. And I think these are issues which the Israeli government really needs to think about, and think about the impact it actually has on the standing of Israel amongst the community of nations. And we can say that, that they're always against us, but Israel cannot operate, cannot be a country which essentially is excluded from the community of nations. And that's where I fear things might go if these issues around humanitarian aid, around what is the status after, are not addressed in a constructive way.
And returning to the point that you made earlier, where you spoke about the existential threat coming from within, and now you're talking about the leadership, you have founded the London Initiative. What is your mission, and what drove you to establish this initiative?
Our mission is essentially to create a scenario where the Overton window of acceptable debates encompasses the ideals of the Declaration of Independence. The ideals of the Declaration of Independence were based that Israel would be a liberal democratic country. It would be a country where there'd be greater and pursue fairness across Israeli society for all citizens, irrespective of their race and religion. It would be a country which wants to live peacefully with its neighbors and would pursue peace. And so the London Initiative essentially is to try and normalize the debate around those three central propositions of the Declaration of Independence, which were the framework on which the founder of Israel thought to build a state, and that there is a partnership between diaspora Jewry and all Israelis, to ensure that that happens, and that diaspora Jews have a stake in this, and they should be seen to exercise that stake. Israel is the nation state of the Jewish people, not the nation state of Israelis. And therefore, this is an important objective for Jews in the diaspora and for all Israelis to try and normalize that debate around these central propositions of what seem to be the key issues which should underpin a resilient state then, and are the key issues that will underpin a resilient state now. And we are far away from that at the moment. The liberal democratic mandate of Israel has been under attack ever since the attempt to redefine the nature and role of the Supreme Court. It's been under attack when you have this NGO bill. It was under attack when laws are passed which seek to differentiate the rights of different citizens. And this is something which is untenable. It's also untenable that across Israel we have communities which don't receive sufficient support, communities which don't have the same quality of education as other communities. It's an unfair society when some communities don't contribute in the way that other communities have to contribute. And that greater fairness is absolutely fundamental. And let me say to you that unfairness in societies is not just unique to Israel. It's the biggest challenge to democracy across the world, where so many people feel they are marginalized and they are looking outside, looking in. And hence they then seek out the demagogues and people who are great at identifying their problems and their hurts, but never good at really identifying what the solutions are. So this is not just unique to Israel, but it's important for me because Israel is essentially my country. And then the issue of peace, the most corrosive thing across Israel society has been these many years of occupation. And I understand, the comments that everybody make that, this is our land, etc. But the bottom line is that the legal legitimacy of Israel, which comes from the United Nations resolution in 1947, which gave rise to the political mandate and the legal mandate for the establishment of the state, was a resolution which contained a land for the Palestinians as well, a state for the Palestinians as well. Sue the right of that Palestinian state, well, then you actually question the legal legitimacy of Israel as well.
I'm chatting with Sir Mick Davis, a South African-born British businessman, philanthropist, and political figure. Mick, if I could just ask you to hold on the line for 20 seconds. We're just taking a news headline, and then I would like to ask you about whether you advocate for Aliyah, or do you think it's still important for us as Jews to maintain our communities around the world? We'll be back with you in 15, 20 seconds.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
And I'm continuing to talk with Sir Mick Davis, a South African-born British businessman, philanthropist, and political figure. And Mick, before we took the break, I mentioned I wanted to ask you if you are one of those who advocates for Aliyah, or if you think it's still important for us as Jews to maintain communities around the world.
I advocate for both, and they're not a dichotomy. My wife and I have done Aliyah. Although we don't spend all our time in Israel, both my daughters are living in Israel, having made Aliyah. My two brothers and their families live in Israel. My late mother lived in Israel. My late mother-in-law lived in Israel. All did Aliyah. I'm a great supporter of Aliyah, and I think anybody who thinks of leaving, whether it's South Africa, United Kingdom, United States, to find pastures anew, I'd encourage them to go and live in Israel. With all its challenges, with all its problems, it's our country. And it is the most wonderful place with the most wonderful people. At the same time, I think diaspora communities remain, for me, a permanent reality. And the resilience of the Jewish people, is dependent on resilient diaspora communities. And I think there's a huge amount of investment that continues to need to be made that these diaspora communities remain resilient, both in religious issues, within education, within cultural issues. And so I strongly support, and a lot of our philanthropy goes into supporting our community here in the United Kingdom, supporting the Jewish community in South Africa for those reasons. And I think it's very important.
And Mick, as a last question, you're a proud Zionist, and yet you are critical of the current government. How do we speak honestly about Israel's internal problems without fueling anti-Semitism or anti-Zionism abroad?
I'll make a couple of points. First of all, we live our lives... I live my life, let me say that, both loving and wrestling with Israel. And that is the plight of every Jew. Secondly, it is no dichotomy being critical of the policy of an Israeli government, whether it's this government or any other government, and your love for Israel and your concern for its future, its resilience, its growth, etc. And where things in your perception are going wrong, you have a duty to actually speak out and act on it and try and do something about it. I mean, things are going right, it's your duty and your responsibility to speak out on that as well and affirm that and be affirmative. So I think that's the second point. The third point I want to make is that the enemies of Israel, the anti-Semites, they have their own language. They don't need to use our narrative to strengthen their position. Their position is what it is, and it's going to be what it's going to be, irrespective of what we do or say. And I think from our point of view, we have a duty. We have a duty to speak out, and we should do that, that we do not have status and we do not have standing. And that's the code that I work by. I believe that I am a constructive contributor. I've been a participant in Israel's life all my adult life, and I hope to continue to be so.
So McDavis, as you mentioned, a duty to speak out. We really appreciate your insight and your thoughts and speaking out with us here on High FM. So McDavis, South African-born British businessman, philanthropist, and political figure, thank you for your time and for your insight.